You wrote The Complete Idiot's Guide to Handwriting Analysis and what else?
Handwriting of the Famous and Infamous.
Okay, and in The Idiot's Guide to Handwriting Analysis, you say the first time you saw your husband's handwriting, you knew he was the one for you. Now, I have never heard anything like this before. When my wife met me, she said what attracted me to her was my smell. Now, that makes some sense.
Okay.
After a fashion, but how is it that one's handwriting can cause you to go head over heels in love with someone?
Oh, it looked a lot like mine. It was completely egocentric. His handwriting really did look a lot like mine, and I knew that we would relate to each other on similar levels. But to be perfectly honest, we've now been divorced from each other twice.
No.
And even though we're still seeing each other, the thing that I saw that attracted me, I also saw something that I knew was going to be problematic in the relationship, and I went ahead with it anyway and proved myself to be correct.
What was it that you saw in the handwriting that was problematic?
Well, I clearly remember 17 years ago saying to him, you rush into things on an emotional level, but when it comes time to putting your money where your mouth is emotionally, you sort of take a step back. And even though we actually got married, our whole relationship has been a process of him wanting to break up, but not really.
Well, now, my wife's handwriting is completely dissimilar to mine. Does your mate's handwriting sample need to look like your handwriting for you to be compatible?
Oh, no, of course not. And people can be completely compatible and yet not want to be together. Or other people can be totally incompatible and yet have a successful relationship. I think that the important ingredient is goodwill towards one another. You have to have that spark and really want to make it work.
If I were to show you a handwriting sample among these people, Mother Teresa, Al Capone, Charles Manson, and Billy Graham, and it was the same sample, in other words, they had written the same words. What could you tell from those samples?
Well, actually, Mother Teresa's handwriting is in my handwriting of the Famous and Infamous, and I do have samples of Manson's handwriting, so I could answer at least that part with some knowledge. Handwriting shows potential at the time of writing. It cannot predict behavior. Except for as handwriting shows past behavior, you could make that a predictor of behavior. But you're going to see very different things. Like in Mother Teresa's handwriting, it's very large and it's round and it's like out there. It's kind of surprising. If you saw it in the book, you would say, I can't believe that's her writing, because I'd expect it to look like, you know, a nun, small and like Catholic school writing. But it doesn't. And that's because people, once they learn how to write, the handwriting is going to take on their own personality traits. And in her case, there's this the roundness shows a deep caring about other people. And because it's large and the need for attention, she drew attention to her causes so she could get help for other, you know, for all the people she dealt with. Manson, on the other hand, if you look at his handwriting, you say, something is really wrong with his picture. It looks nuts. It's extremely crowded, and it's like he writes up the side of the page, or at least on the sample that I've got, and it's just ragged looking, and you could see very obviously that this is a person whose thinking is disorganized.
Couldn't it be a person who simply never learned to write legibly?
It's doubtful, because writing maturity is what we call it. You know, you go to school and they teach you a certain pattern, ways to write each letter. And you learn that until you develop writing maturity. And after that, when you develop writing maturity, that means that you no longer have to think about how to form each individual letter or each word. You just write it because you know, it's part of you now. So if you've at least developed to that point, which you'd have to write somewhat fluidly, it's not going to be a matter of a lack of education.
Well, for example, if somebody has had a few drinks and is asked to write in his or her normal hand, wouldn't that handwriting be dissimilar to the handwriting he or she writes sober?
Yes, and it depends, too, whether the person is an alcoholic or not. An alcoholic who is not drinking is going to have worse handwriting than they do when they first start drinking, because they have a tremor and whatever other aspects. But once after they've had a couple of drinks, then their handwriting straightens out for a while. Then they have a few more drinks, and it deteriorates again. Mm-hmm. There was, quite a few years ago, an advertisement, a billboard by Smirnoff, the vodka people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was true or not, but the illustration was that they had the same sentence written by somebody supposedly after one drink, two, three, four, and five, and you could see how it trailed off at the end, and it was basically saying, you know, if I can't even handle a pen after five drinks, how can I handle a car? And it's a very good illustration of what happens.
Well, how can a handwriting analyst like yourself hope to analyze appropriately and accurately someone's penmanship if he or she is drinking or is an alcoholic?
Well, it would be important to know that about them, and also, if possible, to have other samples at different times to compare to.
I noticed that when I am writing, and I think most of us in the main are doing less writing than we did 10, 20, 30 years ago for obvious reasons called computer.
Sure.
Sometimes I think about the letters before I form them, and occasionally I see, gee, the S that I just wrote isn't the same shape S that I wrote a paragraph or two later. What is that all about?
Well, yeah, it's true that the less you write, the more awkward you're going to be as you start writing. But as you get back into writing, those neural pathways are going to be remembered in your brain, and it'll come back to you. You know, it's the old, like riding a bicycle, you never quite forget. So, yes, computers do have an effect. I mean, I use the computer far more than I write, which I suppose is ironic. But I don't think we'll ever just stop writing.
Well, what does it say about an individual who will shape a letter one way in one paragraph and then will shape it another way in another paragraph and then perhaps back to the first and so on throughout a composition?
Well, It kind of depends. If it's a matter of feeling awkward at first, I wouldn't pay too much attention to the first paragraph. I would want to look at a later one, and that's why it's important to have a good-sized sample for an analysis whenever possible. Nobody's going to form their letters exactly alike, right? And that's not true. Some people do, and those people usually are mentally ill or have some serious issues. They may be obsessive-compulsive. I have samples in my collection that look like a typewriter did them. And that would be very important, you know, to see that. It's very different than somebody who has some variability. We all have some variations in the way we do things. I don't look at individual letters to analyze the writing. I'm looking at the whole thing. I look at the form of the writing, that's the style. I look at the spatial arrangement, how it's laid out on the page, the margins, the distance between the letters, the words, the lines, and I look at the movement of the writing on the page, because it may look static, but it's not. It's actually moving from left to right and up and down and into the paper. So there are many, many things to look at, that more than just how each individual letter is formed.
Can a police officer who has stopped somebody who is signing his name on a speeding ticket learn anything from a handwriting sample that is obviously being given under some stress and duress and obviously is a very sparse handwriting sample?
I think it would be very difficult to make any really legitimate conclusions based just on that.
So a cop,
if I was signing a ticket, I would probably be pretty upset, and my signature wouldn't look the same as it would on a normal, on something else.
So for a street cop or a traffic cop, the hopes of being able to glean much from a very sparse handwriting sample and one that is given under duress and stress, the chances of that officer being able to glean much are virtually nil.
I would agree with that statement, and I would like to add that it's an extremely rare occasion that I would ever analyze just a signature by itself.
Really?
Because the signature is, it's been likened to the cover on a book. It tells you something about what the writer wants to project to the world, but it doesn't tell you if that's the truth about what's really going on inside. So you have to compare the signature to the body of the writing, to the text. The more congruent it is, the more similar it is to the text, the more you have what you see is what you get. But if there are major differences, then that tells you that what the person is inside isn't the same as what he's projecting.
When you, during the course of your career, when you analyze handwriting and you determine this person has criminal tendencies and this person writes normally, what are the differences?
Well, again, there's no one thing. I can't say to you the person crosses his T's this way, so it means, you know, he's this or he's that. It's the preponderance of evidence. It's taking everything together. I do what's called gestalt analysis, handwriting analysis. I'm looking at the whole picture. So if there are several things together, like, let's take an example, Ted Bundy's handwriting, you know, the serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
His handwriting has, at the beginning of each line, he's got a very long, hooked lead-in stroke. And that, combined with the rhythm of the writing, which is, there were some studies done by a woman named Rhoda Wieser in Germany many years ago, that showed slackness in the rhythm of the writing, which is a very complex thing that, you know, I can't really explain right in a minute or two, was a big indicator of criminal tendencies. So that and then some other things in his writing added together would tell me that there is a big problem here.
Well, how could the average detective in Steubenville or Boise or Sacramento hope to be able to glean information from handwriting if it is as complex as you're indicating?
Well, certainly they can have training. One of my colleagues has trained police in something like 75 departments in the southern states, in Arkansas and Texas and other areas around there. And she's trained them specifically to look for danger signals.
Can handwriting be used and handwriting analysis be used in court?
It's a case by case. There are 10 states in which the testimony of a graphologist has been accepted as to mental state. So it just entirely depends on the judge.
Give me some examples that come to mind where a graphologist's testimony in a court / criminal case have had a bearing.
I would have to look them up, and I can certainly do that in a second while we're talking.
Sure. What I'm curious to know is, in those 10 states where a graphologist's testimony can be incorporated by the prosecution, or I presume even by the defense,
mm-hmm.
where has it made a difference, and how has it made a difference?
Okay, here's one. Some of these are, most of them actually are a long time ago because I haven't updated this lately. But this one was in Boulder, Colorado, where a graphologist provided evaluations for juveniles for the purpose of determining placement, penalties, and treatment to the court and the probation department. There was another one in Kentucky where a graphologist testified as to the emotional and mental state of a police officer accused of murder and robbery. The result was a hung jury, which the client attorney considered a victory. And, you know, that could go on and on.
Have you testified as a graphologist in a criminal case?
No. I actually have been qualified to do so, but that hasn't come up yet. I've testified in numerous cases in handwriting authentication, but I have yet to testify as a graphologist.
Do you think that a graphologist's testimony in a criminal case is important?
I certainly think it can be.
Under what circumstances?
Well, if state of mind was an issue, that could be extremely helpful.
So one of the things you've done for police departments is help them determine authenticity of handwriting.
Not for police departments, because they usually have their own experts. I usually work for attorneys or for individuals. But I certainly would, I'm available for any police departments that need that kind of help.
Well, all right, let me ask you this. Have you done any work for law enforcement at this stage?
I've done informal consulting.
Such as?
Such as when an Australian police department contacted me for analysis of handwriting. They had a serial killer who was in prison. And this individual was writing to him. He was, trying to be like a disciple. And they had some murders that resembled the person who was incarcerated, and they wanted to know, if the person who was writing to him was he dangerous. That's really what they wanted to know. And my opinion was yes.
So here was an individual writing to a serial killer incarcerated in Australia. He was writing what to him?
I'm afraid I don't remember. It was postcards. I don't remember the content. It's been a couple of years.
When you saw the disciple's handwriting, what struck you about it?
If I'd known you were going to ask me that, I would have looked it up. I don't remember.
Okay. Let me ask you this. You talk about red flags in handwriting. What red flags do you think stick out the most?
Well, in the samples of criminals, convicted criminals that I've looked at, one of the major items is it's a hard one to explain, but it would be rigid writing, rigid rhythm. Like, I guess the best way to explain it would be a lot of straight strokes. Linear writing rather than a lot of curves,
mm-hmm.
and writing that's squeezed together, because what we look for is a balance between contraction and release. So you have your emotional build up and then you let go. Do you release in an appropriate manner? And these people don't. The tension builds up, and so when they release, it kind of explodes into bad behavior. Extremely heavy pressure, so that the pen almost tears the paper, can be a major danger sign. And it shows a buildup of frustration and hostility. That, in combination with a strong slant to the right in the upper loops, it's like, it's kind of like a slingshot. You pull back and you pull back and then you let go, and the response is extreme. By the same token, extremely light pressure can also be a sign of anger and potential for explosive behavior.
So extremely heavy and extremely light are both red flags to you.
In fact, any extremes in writing are red flags.
And extremes include heaviness, lightness, up and down strokes. What else?
Let's say extra large loops. Extremely, to a point where it's noticeable. If you look at a writing and something on the page jumps out at you, that's probably an extreme. Extremely long loops, extremely wide. And when I say extreme, I would be talking in terms of a loop that is more than three times the length of the small letters, like the letters O and A.
Can
you measure them from top to bottom?
Can handwriting be a lie detector, in your opinion?
I think it can be very helpful, yes, because people don't want to lie. And I took a course through the Seattle Police Department with a man named Avinom Sapir, who's an Israeli, he used to be a polygrapher, and he teaches content analysis. nothing to do with handwriting analysis, but content and analyzing statements given to the police. And that was what he told us, the first thing. People don't want to lie. So in applying that to handwriting, when a person is writing a statement and they're about to write a lie, there's like a minuscule instant, you know, millisecond where they have to stop and think about the false information. So there may be extra space before the lie, or the writing may change direction, things like that.
But aren't a lot of criminals pathological liars?
Well, they are, but still, they've got to stop and think about what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not consciously thinking about it, the brain has to stop and change direction.
Did Ted Bundy and Charlie Manson have similar idiosyncrasies in their handwriting?
No, completely different.
Really?
Manson is mentally ill.
And Bundy wasn't?
Bundy is just evil.
So Bundy was evil, Manson was mentally ill, and therefore the differences in their handwriting was?
Manson's is disorganized. You can see looking at it that there's a mental problem with this person. It's just completely, it covers every millimeter of the page, and it's just, it's wild. There's no rhythm to speak of. With Bundy, it's well organized, and somebody who didn't know handwriting analysis probably wouldn't see anything unusual in it. I created handwriting analysis software, which shows red flags for pathological behavior, and I entered all the data for Bundy. And while it shows a lot of good things, because, you know, he was able to move around in the world and do very well, but it also showed a big block of red flags. And in using this software, if you have more than one red flag, it's extreme pathological behavior. So he was able to hide that under his social veneer.
So his handwriting, to the layman, would look fine, but to somebody trained like you, you're thinking, oh my God, this guy is trouble.
Yes, exactly.
So what additional red flags could a layman with minimal training seek to find?
They should read that chapter in my book. I have a whole chapter on red flags. But it's also important to know. First of all, you have to know what's normal. So, you know, even like in a weekend seminar, you'd learn an awful lot about how to separate the normal from the danger. You have to look at a lot of handwriting samples and see what's good rhythm and what's slack rhythm and what's rigid. One of the interesting things I found, especially in looking at the handwritings of serial killers who are incarcerated, is that their handwriting changes somewhat from when they're on the street doing their thing. It gets a lot more rigid because they have to follow the rules while they're in prison, and they gotta, you know, they can't let that other side out. So the handwriting gets more and more rigid.
Are police departments missing the boat by not utilizing the services of a graphologist?
Well, I think it couldn't do anything but help them. Not only a lot of police departments actually are using it in helping them to interview victims and witnesses, and also suspects. So some police departments are benefiting from it. But it would also be helpful for them in hiring their own staff.
How would handwriting analysis help police in recruiting the right people?
Because they'll know, they can screen out the people who are able to interview very well, but who have a pathological side, or who have maybe physiological issues that don't show up in tests. I think you're aware of the fact that my own daughter was murdered by a police officer, her boyfriend, and that there were signs in his handwriting that were pathological, even though he was a very nice guy, you know, to all appearances.
Your daughter's boyfriend was an INS agent.
A special agent, yes.
And early on, from what I'm reading, you were concerned about him largely because of his handwriting.
Yeah, that's all I had to go on. Shortly after they began dating in 1999, I guess she told him about what I do, and he said he'd like to have his handwriting analyzed, so I did, and I talked to him about it, and I noticed something that caused me concern, and I had written a note to myself on it, which is still on a post-it note on that sample. It says that there's potential for explosive behavior. And I said to him, have you had a blow to your head? Because there was a sign in the handwriting that indicated that. And he said, yes, I was hit in the head so hard during his work that I was almost blinded. And he was being treated for serious, very painful headaches. So that concerned me, combined with the fact that his handwriting had was highly authoritarian kinds of behavior.
And that, did you share that with both him and your daughter?
Yes, we had a conference call. But at 27, a young woman with a strong mind of her own, she did whatever she wanted to do. And by the time she decided that she needed to leave him, about, I think, 10 or 11 months later, it was too late.
What happened?
Well, she was going to, she had decided to leave him. He'd made some threats a couple months before, and she finally decided it was time. And they went out to a bar that night, and they had an argument there, and she left him and drove home. And he walked home and apparently got pretty upset by the time he got home, and he attacked her. And I interviewed the eyewitness who lived downstairs, and what he said was that he heard her crying outside his door, and he brought her into his apartment, and she said she had called 911, and she had marks on her throat where Tom had choked her. So he tried to encourage her to wait for the police, but after about 5 minutes, she said that she wanted to go back upstairs because she was afraid he would hurt her cats. So she returned to the apartment, and it was quiet for a while, and then a few minutes later, he heard her on the stairs again, and he looked outside, and he saw Tom pursue her. She was coming back to his apartment. She was running to his apartment, and he opened fire and hit her 8 times, hit her in every vital organ. He also managed to hit the neighbor's bicycle, child's bicycle, and the entertainment center inside his apartment.
And what became of him?
Well, right about this time, he got in the car and started to drive out, and the police arrived. This was like 40 minutes after she called 911. And when he saw them coming into the complex, he got out of the car. And according to the witness, he went over to her body and he kissed her, and then he put the gun in his mouth.
And he killed himself.
Yes.
How was it that the INS, which is a huge organization and probably has graphology experts of their own, didn't detect this? Or was this an injury that occurred on the job that they wouldn't necessarily have detected?
The injury, I don't think they use graphologists. I don't think they use any kind of psychological testing from what I was able to glean. These people are given weapons and training, and they have to test how competent they are in using the weapon, but not in their mental health.
How is that possible that a major federal government law enforcement body does not have psychological testing for their recruits and to include handwriting analysis?
That's a good question, and I'd love to hear the answer.
When you saw his handwriting that he had sent you, he had requested you originally, Sheila, take a look at my handwriting and let me know, did his handwriting jump out at you and you thought, oh my God?
I wouldn't say it was that obvious, but knowing what I do and having over 30 years experience, I was able to look at it and see, yeah, this is not going to work. There's some danger signs here. And especially with knowing my daughter, I explained to him, you cannot boss her around. You can't. He's an authoritarian kind of person. Do as I say and not as I do. That's not going to work. So from a personnel standpoint, if I'd been looking at his writing for hiring, I would have pointed out those things. And then the other aspect, the physiological aspect, is something else. I think that was really important when you're giving somebody a gun. Somebody who has a head injury and also who has an alcohol problem, that played a part, too.
Well, now, come on, Sheila. There are a lot of cops who have been busted on the head a few times and do a little bit of drinking.
Sure. And they should be tested to make sure that they're able to handle the stress.
If you were talking to the INS for whom this fellow worked, what would you tell them about his handwriting that they should have seen?
Well, it's just what I just said, that if he's had a head injury or more than one, and they were aware of that, they were aware that he didn't deal well with stress because there were other incidents in his file, and so that they should have monitored somebody like this. And handwriting is a good way of monitoring. Handwriting changes as a person changes. So it's a really good thing to do over a period of time, you know, a longitudinal study.
Can it tell, let me rephrase this, should it be something that is done periodically during an officer's career?
Yes, absolutely, for that very reason, to see if there are changes.
How quickly could a handwriting analyst or a graphologist be able to determine this sample given in 2000 is markedly different from this one given in 2006, and therefore you need to be aware this officer could be a ticking time bomb?
When you say how quickly, I mean,
how quickly could you look at the two separate handwriting samples and then tell this officer's superior or supervisor, you've got a potential serious issue here? How quickly? Could you do it in 5 minutes? Could you?
Sure. I mean, it should be obvious if there have been important changes, then looking at them, I mean, certainly you'd want to have time to study them, but looking at them side by side should instantly tell a professional that they're, you know, what's going on and how the person has changed.
So you could look, so let's hypothetically say the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, which is where we are based, could send you 1,000 handwriting samples of officers from 1999 or 2000. You have those on file, and then they send you the same 1,000 officer samples in 2006, and you could go through those in 2-3 minutes apiece and get back to St. Louis PD and say, you got problems here with Officer A, D, K, and J.
Conceivably, yes, but I think that in something that important, I'd want a little more time than that.
Well, let's say you had time. What I am asking you is, you wouldn't need to see the officer. You wouldn't need to meet the officer. You wouldn't need to see his or her prior performance record. You could tell a lot from the two handwriting samples from varying years.
You know, I've analyzed more than 10,000 handwriting samples over my career, and I have met maybe, I don't know, 1%. I don't ever see the people that I analyze. So, yeah, it's a very easy, cost-effective way of doing a test because I don't have to be there on the spot. I have clients all over the world. I don't even have to be able to read the language that they write it in.
And you don't need to have a copy of the officer's personnel record.
Even have to have their name. I don't have to. The kind of information that handwriting doesn't conclusively reveal that is helpful but not 100% necessary is their age and their gender and which hand they write with. And the reason for that is because a person could be very emotionally immature and yet maybe in their 30s or 40s, the handwriting would show the emotional maturity. So that's why I'd want their age. And gender, you know, same thing. You could have a person who is a man that has a very sensitive, traditionally feminine traits, and the handwriting would look more like a woman's, and vice versa. So they could take the name off or just put the first name or a number and their age and their gender and their handedness, and that's all the information I would have to have.
How accurate are you? Are you 100% if you looked at, again, an officer's handwriting sample from 5-8 years ago, and you look at it in 2006, you say, there are some problems here that could explode. How accurate are you, 100%?
I'd be afraid to say 100% because human behavior is so complex. but and psychological tests don't claim anywhere near that. I like to say that I guarantee at least 90% accuracy when I have good samples to work from, you know, not just scrap of writing. So pretty high degree of accuracy.
So a department in Charleston, West Virginia, which may not have a professional graphologist or handwriting analyst, would be remiss, after a fashion, if they didn't avail themselves of your service, because you could lower their insurance premium / liability, workman's comp, etc. You could potentially lower that dramatically from 1,000 miles distant just by analyzing, using your education expertise, the handwriting samples of their officers.
Hey, you want to go to work for me? I love what you just said.
Well,
and it's absolutely true.
I'm not promulgating your wares. It just, to me, seems to make a lot of sense that a department that does not have that expertise under their umbrella should at least consider the use of somebody like a Sheila Lowe, who has this training and education and background. I mean, to me, if I were the risk manager for the department, I would say, hey, there's nothing we can lose except if a department came to you and said, we've got 1,000 officers, and every year we want you to analyze all of them and let us know where we have some problem children. Mm-hmm. What are you going to charge them?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'd have to work that out.
No. Sheila, how much?
I don't know. I mean, my standard fee is $125 for a personality profile. I have some, if I can do it on the computer, you know, it cuts down the price because it's much quicker.
All right, let's do it this way. If any law enforcement agency happens to be listening to this iPodcast or webcast and they find this intriguing and they say, yeah, this makes some sense, would you give them a break on a on a trial basis if they mention they heard it on Crime Time?
Absolutely.
All right. So if you're listening, how could this not make sense? I guess even if they tried it, if they wanted to send you names, I'm sorry, not name, but handwriting samples of a variety of officers just to get a feel for what you do, you could do that.
The best way to start is to have their own handwriting analyzed, and that way they can see how accurate I am. And, you know, when you think of the cost is less than a day's wages, it's like insurance. It's very, very cost effective.
Well, that makes sense. So if the captain or the sheriff or the sergeant says, yeah, I'll have my handwriting analyzed, and you would do that for them, and you know, maybe you'll give them a break in the price, mm-hmm. with a possibility that you get the entire department. Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
And how could not everybody win on this deal?
I absolutely agree.
All right, and I want my cut, Sheila. I have just put on the best commercial on worldwide radio you will ever get, young lady.
You absolutely have.
All right. Now, how can a law enforcement agent, how can anybody reach you if they are interested in any of the above we have discussed here?
Well, they should first visit my website, which is easy. It's just my name, SheilaLowe.com. And my email address is Sheila@SheilaLowe.com.
Okay. And that is Sheila, SHEILALOWE, Sheila,
yes.
Lowe. I like this. I like what you're saying. It makes sense for a department, not to try it. I mean, what the heck? Give this a shot, even if it's just a couple of the supervisors. Have Sheila analyze your handwriting. Sheila, thank you very much for being with us on Crime Time. You're a delight. And the books, again, that you have written, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Handwriting Analysis, and the other one again?
Handwriting of the Famous and Infamous.
Handwriting of the Famous and Infamous, and I'm sure they're both available on Amazon.com.
They are.
Sheila, thank you. God bless you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
You bet.